Geisinger's President and CEO, Dr. Jaewon Ryu.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you to all of you for joining us again. Good afternoon. As we started the previous couple press conferences that we did, I'll start off with just kind of going through some of the facts of where we're at, some of the numbers, which I know many of you have expressed an interest in hearing about, and also some of the emerging work that's going on. And then we can turn to questions and answers. So at this point, we've tested a little over right around 14,000 people, and we still continue to see a roughly 15% positive test result rate. And of those that test positive, we're continuing to see a 15% or so of them require hospitalization. I think the testing positive rate, one quick note to mention, although it's still a little early to tell, we still hover around that 15%, but we think some of the more recent testing, it feels like maybe that percentage rate might be going up. But again, we'll keep you posted on whether that is an actual trend or if that's something that we're just seeing momentary blips, if you will. As far as what's in our hospitals across the different campuses today, we have about 100 people, patients admitted with COVID across our various campuses, and about a third of them are in the ICU environment. We have had 60 or so deaths, and obviously our deepest condolences go out to those families. And we've also had about 120 or so employees who test positive out of our 27,000 Pennsylvania employees. And so that number from a percentage basis continues to be very low. And the rate at which our employee population is testing positive compared to the overall community positive testing rate is also remaining much lower. So that's all good news. As far as what we see as trends around COVID-related activity, as we mentioned to you previously, we are seeing in the Northeast, Luzerne and Lackawanna counties, higher levels of activity than other areas that we serve. And what we have seen over the last week to 10 days is not only a leveling off, but perhaps the beginnings of a decline in activity in those counties. Specifically on the Lackawanna side, I think we've seen a leveling off and a little bit of a dip and a decrease. Luzerne still feels like it's leveling, but maybe not quite at the decreasing phase yet. So that's a good thing. As we've also mentioned to you all, we envision and our data projection model suggests that the COVID virus is migrating westward. And so across all of our various campuses and the counties that we serve, we envision they'll all have some dynamic of their own peaks. But what we're projecting are lower peaks than what we were projecting and peaks that are farther off into the summer months than what we had previously been anticipating. I think that's a testament to everybody's good efforts, both within the organization and in the community around distancing efforts, precautionary measures, maintaining good hand hygiene practices, as well as what we're seeing now in a lot of places, which is the prevalence of using masks. So all of those are good things as well, and we believe that they're having a good impact on continuing to flatten the course of this disease. I think there's a lot of talk, as you all know, both at the state level, but also within health systems in particular, around reintroducing various aspects of the functions of society, but also in the case of health systems, elective non-urgent procedures or non-urgent clinic visits that had previously been postponed. I think there's a wave now where many health systems, ours included, are looking at careful and thoughtful ways to do that safely. And we'll see some of that activity continue to roll out over the coming weeks. I think one thing that's important to note, and we've gotten some questions on this, is even 5 weeks or so when we had previously canceled or postponed our elective non-urgent procedures and the non-urgent clinic visits, the urgent visits and the urgent procedures we had never stopped doing. And that obviously, if there's a care need that has clinical urgency to it, that's something that we've continued to do throughout this time. And as we get back into reintroducing procedures or visits that don't have as much clinical urgency but still need to be addressed. Those are the things we're now able to layer on, and you'll see a phased sequencing of layering on different kinds of cases, taking into account things like our bed capacity, our equipment supply, of course, staffing, of course, the patient need and the clinical urgency of the services, and lastly, the appropriate role of testing in each of those scenarios. So all of those things are well underway. I think the other thing to note is that as we do that, there is a geographic or a local dynamic to how this plays out, given that in the Northeast, we have seen greater levels of activity. That may not be where we start with reintroducing and layering some of these elective, less urgent procedures and visit types. So that gives you a summary of kind of what we've been up to this past week and the numbers that we've seen. But maybe I'll turn it over at this point, as we always do, to questions that you all may have.
The first question we have is from the Clinton County Record. You mentioned it briefly in your opening remarks, but specifically, Clinton County has had the highest percentage growth of cases of any county in the state. What are your thoughts on the westward trend of cases?
Yeah, so what we've seen from the get-go, believe it or not, and we have a data projection and analyst team that looks at this fairly regularly, and we run our projection algorithms at least once a week, if not more. But what we've seen there is a staggered effect where some areas, like the Northeast, see the activities spike around COVID sooner, and that's indeed what we have seen. And then other areas follow later. So there's a staggered nature to how this will hit from a timing perspective. And we've always projected that as things start in the Northeast, all of the areas, all of the counties that we serve will eventually hit a peak, but that'll be very gradual. You know, it kind of climbs up to the peak, and then even coming back down from the peak, we envision it to be gradual. I think Clinton County is seeing that climb happen. We're seeing similar climbs in other areas. The good thing here is it's not a steep climb the way that we had previously projected and the way that we had probably seen early on in the Northeast. We think that's more gradual, and we think that's a lower peak eventually in each of these areas. But I think each county will experience that rate of growth at some point.
Matt Catrillo from WKOK just wrote in explaining that the State Department of Health has said we already reached the peak. What's different from our data and theirs, and why are we looking to the summer months?
Yeah, so I think this really gets to the local picture. If you take a look at something statewide, it's a tale of probably 50 different individual stories, because we know that healthcare dynamics are local. Things happen within communities, and this is no different. And so a good illustration is what I just described around the staggered nature. Luzerne and Lackawanna counties, they've seen that peak earlier on. It's happened probably already, and in the case of Luzerne, I think we're kind of at the peak and hopefully headed downwards. But with each county, depending on where you are geographically, that will have a staggered effect. And so if you look at it through the statewide lens, I think a lot of that data is really driven off of the major population centers, namely the Philadelphia metropolitan area. And of course, we know that they've peaked already. And so that's driving the overall state numbers. But for the true picture of what's going on in any given community, you got to get local to the individual county level, if not even the zip code level.
The Press Enterprise and also WKOK, is Geisinger involved in any experimental use of the drug remdesivir?
Yeah, so remdesivir has gotten quite a bit of media coverage in the last several days. It's a drug that's an antiviral treatment from the pharmaceutical company Gilead. They had some clinical trials that the results have not been officially released yet. So we don't know exactly which outcomes they were looking at, but there's some early evidence from the media accounts and from Dr. Fauci and others that it shows some promising results. And so that's very reassuring. It, along with several other treatment options, are all being studied at the moment. We were not directly involved with the remdesivir trial. We are involved in a couple other trials related to a different class of medications called IL-6 inhibitors. Sarilumab is the drug name of the clinical trial that we've been involved in. And so all of these are potential treatment modalities that we can use to tackle the virus. And I think the more of them we kind of have vetted and proven as effective treatments, I think it'll arm the healthcare systems with the right set of tools to really treat people as they come in with this. I think the other word of caution, though, is there's still a lot to be learned. And so we would obviously love to continue to see the positive results of studies, whether it's remdesivir or other medications. But I think there's still a lot more learning to be had, specifically around, you know, what's the right dose, when in the disease course is it most effective, and even who are the right candidates for the treatment. I think these are all questions that we'll continue to get more information on.
Also from WKOK, can you explain why admitted expecting mothers are being checked for COVID-19?
Yeah, so I think we've mentioned before, but for those of you who may not know, our lab follows criteria-based testing. And thus far, it's roughly mirrored the same criteria as outlined by the CDC. And also our lab is under the regulatory oversight of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. And as part of that regulatory oversight, there are certain scope of practice restrictions around who we're able to test and under what scenarios. I think in the case of pregnant women on their way into our labor and delivery units, we received that authorization from the FDA because that is a category of patients who are at higher risk. I think that's scientifically known that they are immunosuppressed or considered immunosuppressed. There's also a higher risk of potentially spread in that environment because of the potential for what we call aerosolization, that the virus can get into the air as part of labor. And so in order to keep not just those patients, but also our staff and others in the environment, including other patients safe, that category made sense to add into the criteria-based testing that we have, and the FDA also agreed with that approach. And so we incorporated that just recently.
From the Press Enterprise, what are the guidelines for ambulance medics to follow up when a COVID-19 patient should go to the hospital versus when they should stay home?
Yeah, so we've set up a 24/7 hotline that helps to triage in case people have questions around their symptoms and how concerned should they be, what should they be on the lookout for. And so I think people I know in the community have been using that hotline, and it allows them to go through a little bit of a triage before making that determination. They could always call their physician's office to the extent that that physician's office is open and available. And of course, we, as we've always done, even from before COVID, work very closely with the local EMS agencies to ensure that that field triage, so to speak, happens as far as who should come in and who is probably well enough to stay at home. But if anybody feels concerned or feels like there may be an emergency going on, those are people that should come in and be evaluated.
Thank you. Also from the Press Enterprise, have ventilators proved as necessary as they first were thought to be? According to state numbers, there are 101 ventilators in Montour County, and there have never been more than 10 in use.
Yeah, so I think the data is always a tricky thing is where I would start. The state tracking is for COVID patients only. And so I think it's important to remember that we still have significant portions of patients in our hospitals who don't have COVID. And we know that despite COVID being in the picture, people are still going to have the heart attacks and the strokes and the diabetic emergencies and so forth. And many of them are on ventilators. And so we know that as we sit here today, if you went to our flagship site here in Danville and the surrounding areas in Montour County, we're looking at a 75 to 80% use rate of all of our ventilators. Only a portion of that is COVID related. The other portion, which is not captured in that data, are the non-COVID patients that we continue to treat and see.
The first, Governor Wolf is expected to announce that he will open some counties in our area the next week. How do you think that will affect things?
So I think this is where, and we've said this and tried to get out into the communities to emphasize the fact that this is not the time to put the foot off the gas or pull the foot off the gas. We have to stay diligent around the precautions and the distancing efforts. We do think that there's a safe and a responsible way to reopen segments of society, so we're supportive of what Governor Wolf has put forth. I just think that as we do that, the message around the community needs to reinforce that this isn't the time that we're all in the clear. This is especially the time that we pay attention to those precautions. And so distancing efforts, masking in public, hand hygiene, touching of the eyes and face, I think these are all things that we would encourage people to still be mindful of. But at the same time, we think that if stores and other places of business are able to reintroduce some of their functions, but introduce some other elements to do this carefully and thoughtfully, we're all in favor. And so some of the things that you might see, and I think there's been a lot of discussion, and I know that we've been out there advising a lot of local employers along these lines is, you know, how do you screen employees as they come back to work? How do you make sure you put distancing in place? How do you stagger things like lunch breaks and make sure that not as many people are gathered in a single environment, whether it's work or places of business? I think all of these things need to be part of the solution as we reopen our society.
Thank you. The other question from WNEP, can you comment on the money, particularly the $100 million Geisinger is getting from the Hospital Emergency Relief Loan Program that the state announced this week?
Yeah, so I think we've mentioned before that COVID has a significant negative impact financially on health systems just generally, and we're a part of that as well. That negative impact, I think there's a recognition of that from policymakers both at the state and federal level. So we are tremendously grateful and thankful for what our elected officials are doing both in Harrisburg and DC. As part of that, one of the programs was around advancing or loans essentially to help with liquidity and cash needs to continue to operate our business. And that's the program I think the question is referring to. And we've absolutely taken advantage of participating in that program, as have many other health systems. I think there was a press release just yesterday or the day before from the governor's office, and there are 80 or 90 other hospitals across the state that are taking advantage of that program. So that's one of several. There are some grant programs through the federal government as well as part of the overall stimulus. I think what's important to note, however, is that we have estimated the financial impact to Geisinger as a total system to be about negative $100 million on a monthly basis. So every month, COVID impact is negative $100 million. All of those avenues that we have to tap into, the grant dollars through the federal stimulus package, we've received thus far somewhere between $60 and $70 million of support. And of course, that doesn't go towards defraying the entirety of that negative impact. Because as we all know, the impact of COVID is going to be with us for months, if not well into the following year. And so I think that's a challenge facing a lot of health systems, and we're no different. And so it's important that we continue to be able to tap into programs like those, whether it's grants or whether it's even short-term loans that help with the immediate liquidity issues.
Eric Chicatano from the Daily Item wrote in, employees who aren't working or whose hours have been reduced, will they be recalled as elective services and et cetera resume over the coming weeks?
Yeah, so our approach has always been focused around reassignment of our staff as a result of some areas decreasing in their activity and other areas increasing in their activity level. We've had to reassign our staff, and at this point, I think reassigned over 2,000 of our staff from areas that have less activity to areas that have more. And thus far, areas that have had less activity are those operating rooms and some of the other clinic sites where, by design, we had postponed or rescheduled and canceled a lot of those activities, as I referenced earlier. Now, as we bring those functions back, that's part of bringing it back, is planning for not just our equipment and supplies and the bed capacity, but also the staffing requirements as we carefully plan how we phase those activities back in. And of course, at the very top of what we take into account is the clinical urgency of the services and what we could layer back in safely. The other thing that I think is worth mentioning, and it gets to the earlier question around the use of ventilators, is we have that staggering sequencing or timeline of where and when the disease is hitting. And so as we've seen earlier peaks in the Northeast, and as we're anticipating later peaks in other markets, we're able to cross-deploy resources, whether it's ventilators or supplies or staffing, to move to the areas of greater need. And it requires a lot of flexibility. We are super lucky that our staff have been really flexible and agile in terms of being able to adapt as the situations change.
WKOK, can you reiterate the importance of going to the doctor first if you have signs of the virus? It seems people may still be going straight to the hospital.
Yeah, I think if you're able to get to the doctor first, we think that's a great route. I think there are triage lines. In our case, we set up nurse triage lines. Actually, even before COVID, we had these set up for patients of ours in our primary care, who are managed in our primary care centers. We have nurse triage lines set up so that people can call in, and before they physically have to get in the car and come on in, they're able to ask some questions, maybe oftentimes even get their issues addressed via phone. But at a minimum, they're able to get some guidance, some clinical guidance on whether or not they need to be seen right away and in what setting. I think those kinds of triage functions and our 24/7 hotline around COVID serves that purpose in a COVID-specific way. But those are great ways to get some guidance on, do you go in right away? Do you go to the ER? Is it the urgent care? Is it your primary care office? Is it telemedicine, which we've cranked up the activity there? We're doing now 4,000 to 5,000 visits via telemedicine every day. And so these are all channels available to folks to try to get their care needs met.
Great. From the Press Enterprise, how is Geisinger's PPE supply holding out, and have any staff members been infected at the hospital?
So our PPE, we're at a good spot. I think it's one of these things where you could always use more and you always want more, but we monitor this daily, if not hourly. And I think we've been extremely lucky. Our early ability to do testing on site has really helped, because the faster you could rule out patients, that means the less PPE you have to use, because those folks are definitively ruled out. And we've had on-site testing here since a very early on period of the disease course. And so that's allowed us at this point to do all of our testing on-site, where we get results returned within hours as opposed to days. And that allows us to conserve PPE, so we feel like we're in a pretty good spot. As far as employee exposures, we look at the employees who have tested positive. And as we've mentioned, we have about 120, I believe, employees that have tested positive. Four of those employees have been hospitalized, but subsequently made a complete recovery and have been discharged from the hospital. And those 120 who have tested positive, our overall employee positive test rate has hovered around 8%, which is half the rate that we're seeing from the community at large. So our employees are actually half as likely to be positive as others in the community around them. And so we know that that rate will never be zero, because our employees are members of the community, just like all of us are, and they're gonna be exposed potentially through community channels as much as anybody else. But I think we find a lot of reassurance in the fact that the rate at which they're testing positive is half the rate of what we're seeing in the ambient community around us.
Multiple outlets have asked about the state now allowing non-emergent procedures, which you talked about earlier. When might Geisinger start doing them, and will it be in a phased approach?
Yeah, so on the clinically urgent procedures, we've always been doing them. I think that's important to note, because things like cancer tumors, clearly there's a time sensitivity to those. Those have never stopped. The sorts of procedures that are less urgent, and to your point, Matt, you call them non-emergent or otherwise, those are things that we're slowly introducing back. I think our approach here has been safety over speed, and yet we're moving pretty quickly, as is everybody at this point. I think in the week or two to come, we're going to continue to layer on more classes and more sort of categories of procedures, with some of the less complicated procedures coming first, because those don't require beds typically, and they're just quick outpatient procedures. I think you'll see those coming in first. You'll see it happen in geographies other than the Northeast, given that the Northeast has higher activity levels of COVID still. And then in the weeks to come, with each week, you'll see another layer of different categories of cases that we reintroduce. I know the team has been working, for weeks at this point, carefully plotting that out around what are the clinically most prioritized and urgent kinds of scenarios and cases, and where can we do them, and how can we plan for the related equipment, bed needs, supplies, the role of testing. A lot of different factors go into this determination, but we haven't put a date and said that's the date we're shooting for. We've tried to be more guided by the clinical realities and the urgency, and balancing all those other considerations at the same time.